You are listening to From a Stranger to a Stranger. My name is Issa Martel, and today is Dhul Hijjah the 8th, 1439 in the Islamic Hijri year, which corresponds to August 19, 2018. Assalamu alaikum, peace be unto you, and it's been a little bit since we did a podcast. I had been busy doing a number of things, and like I said when we decided to restart this, that's what happened every now and then. One main thing that I did was I had appeared on Darkness Radio, well, Beyond the Darkness, which is produced by Darkness Radio, and I had talked with Dave Schrader about possession, demons, jinn, in regards to, or not in regards to, from an Islamic perspective, how we deal with these types of things. And we ended up talking for an hour and a half, which was pretty good. It brought up a number of points that I would like to discuss, not today, but use that as a jumping board to bring up a number of, or elaborate on a number of things that we talked about on there in more detail, because when he asked me to do that, the purpose was specifically to talk about an exorcism. But to get to that point, we had to spend majority of the show talking about how I accepted Islam, and I came from being a Catholic, and what happened, and some thoughts on afterlife and commonalities between Islam and Christianity, and things dealing with the realm of supernatural, since his show is basically supernatural. It was pretty good. I enjoyed it, and unfortunately, it didn't get a big bump in, I don't want to say advertising, but normally he advertises the show for the weekend. We had recorded the show earlier to air on the Sunday that it did, but unfortunately his daughter is diabetic and basically had like a, went into like a diabetic shock or whatever and was in the hospital, and it was a big mess. So he was dealing with that during that weekend, and we didn't really get any advertisement, but alhamdulillah, everything turned out great for his daughter, and it was sure a harrowing experience for him. And anyone who has kids with any sort of health condition can relate. My child, one of them, has severe allergies, and he had been given EpiPens multiple times. I think the first time we gave it to him, he was maybe one. He's only six now, so we probably gave him seven times already, I would imagine. I lost count. So it's shocking when these things happen to anyone, but particularly when it happens to children. My heart definitely goes out to these people, because it is traumatic, and it's something that you can't really control. You feel, in a sense, helpless at times, because these things are out of your control. But I'm glad in his instance, and in all of our instances, it happened to turn out well. So that went on. I think that was if this is the third Sunday, it was 2 Sundays ago. That happened. I really enjoyed that experience. Some other things that have been going on, if you had heard about the grandchild of Siraj Wahaj, very sad case here. The child was not given medicine and unfortunately ended up dying. It's kind of, I don't know if it's in the news, to be honest. I don't really follow the news, the mainstream news, but I have been slightly following this via social media. And this is a sad event. And it brought up some more questions as well, about possession and just jinn and the unseen in general. In this instance, the mother, I believe, convinced, or however, her husband that the kid didn't need medicine, and that he was possessed. Very cultish behavior. I don't justify any of their actions, but I will use it to mention something that does need to be addressed, and that's mental health within society in general. Of course, I'm speaking here from a strictly Islamic perspective, but we do see this in all religions and even in non-religious people, that mental health awareness is severely lacking in just the general consciousness of society, here in the United States, and I'm assuming that it's just like this everywhere else. From a religious point of view, it's interesting because I was talking to some people online and I noticed that there are a number of people that are kind of dismissive about the world of the unseen. And in Arabic, this word for these unseen beings are jinn. But just in the case in general, that even people who are Muslim kind of dismiss this aspect of religion as something that's being, I don't want to say fake, but at the moment I can't think of any other term, but they'll dismiss that as not being real, like it's hokey, or the one brother who was talking to me used it, how he rationalized it, he used it in saying that at the time period, which would have been the 7th century, in that language, in that culture, the word jinn was used. But it was used to describe what they understood at that time. But he said now these things might be like bacteria and germs. And to be honest, I kind of laughed because I said, if you're familiar with Islamic ideology or theology, you'll know that jinn are a big issue in it. And throughout the Quran, there are verses that are addressed to human and jinn. So the Quran would essentially be a revelation to mankind and jinn. and jinn being the other beings that live in our universe, that we are another, the other intelligent being. There's also angels as well. But jinn have free will. So there are the Quran, which means the recital, or it's the revelation in Islam. It's being recited and addressing humans and jinn and inviting them to either accept this way of life or teach them about monotheism, teach them about your creator, to reflect upon the creation, to reflect upon the creator. So it's doing this throughout the whole Quran. There is a specific point, a specific chapter in the Quran that's called the jinn. And the story behind this chapter was that Prophet Muhammad, he had gone out to the desert and spoke to the jinn, and this was the chapter that he recited to them. It's directly addressing the jinn. So when you say jinn are bacteria or something like this, I said to the brother, I was like, well, so you're saying when he went out to the desert, he was just talking to air? He didn't know that he's talking to air as if these are intelligent beings able to communicate with him, but in essence, he was just sitting there babbling to bacteria. So these are kind of things that I find interesting, that if you proclaim to be religious, you have this interpretation of major aspects of the religion. Because let's be honest, religion is ultimately believing in something that can be called supernatural. I mean, we can't see God. That's a reality. We can't see God. We believe that there is a creator based on signs and theoretical questions, ideas, concepts that we envision. Typically, the baseline idea is that because there is a creation, there is a creator. In the Quran, God, the creator, addresses us to with the statement, "Did you create yourself?" So, obviously we say, no, we didn't will ourselves into existence. So therefore, how did we come into existence? And you have theories of evolution and whatever other theories, and religion is one of them, and what have you. But if you are believing in religion, whether it's Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Mormonism, Buddhism, anything, there is some sort of essential belief in something that we would be called supernatural, or it's unseen and technically unprovable in a scientific type of manner, at least in our current level of technology and our current level of understanding, which is minute. When you really think of it, in the span of the entire galaxy, even our own solar system, we went to the moon. That's the farthest we got, like physically, a handful of times. We're out via satellite, we're out at the edge of the solar system, but they launched that satellite, I believe, don't quote me, they launched that satellite in the 70s, was it? And it just got there now. So, we're really, really small in the grand scheme of things. And to me, it's quasi-arrogant to proclaim such statements that we understand this and that we can only use science as a means to an end. And I know most scientists or people who are in that field might not use science in that manner, meaning that it's clear, if science doesn't prove something exists, therefore it doesn't exist. But in the general populace or audience. This is I'm speaking extremely general here, the idea that is out there. When you have people who counter the arguments of supernatural, unexplained events, religion, opponents to these things typically use science as a be all and end all. And you can counter this too. I'm not really going to go into that, at least not on this episode, but you can counter that if you know how. But you have to be educated. And even if you do counter such ideas, you have to get to a point where you accept, like, look, these are really, really ideas about belief and what do you believe? This is what I believe. I believe this based on this, this plus this plus this plus this has led me to believe that this exists. I am under the how I interpret things in the most, to break it down in the most simplest explanation possible, for there not to be an infinite loop of like the Big Bang, let's say the Big Bang, and then you go, well, who created the Big Bang? Okay, well then who created that, right? Then who created that? Or what created that? What created that? What created that? We know scientifically that the universe had a beginning and most likely it will have an end. It used to be believed that the universe was eternal. And then that kind of posed maybe a better argument to religion, because religion says that God created the universe. So if the universe was eternal, then you have a theological issue here that you need to somehow address. But my current scientist, or not scientist, but current science, tends to say that the universe had a beginning, which we know as the Big Bang, right? And science doesn't go to before the Big Bang. The Big Bang is the starting point, so that is the beginning. There's some couple theories about if it's ending or if it's expanding or if it's going to do the contraction or whatever. We know these things, but we do know those things are debated, but we do, it's pretty much agreed upon universally that there was a Big Bang and therefore there was a starting point of our universe. So, based on that, if there was a starting point, you, at least how I view this from my experience, my logic dictates that something had to start the something. Like the it there wasn't nothing. Like, I mean, I know it's cliche to say, but something can't come from nothing. So if there was nothing, the Big Bang just can't spontaneously happen and the whole universe like just pops out of nowhere. That's based on logic, because in any other situation in our reality, if I said that to you, like, you wouldn't believe it. Oh, I got it. Like, say, for example, I got a new car. Oh, where'd you get the new car? Well, I just was walking in my driveway and pop, it just popped out of nowhere, I know that's a comical example, but this is like how I break down the logic that goes into this thinking of the Big Bang coming from nothing. And in my personal belief, there had to be something that either triggered the Big Bang or existed before the Big Bang. But there, that is something. In my understanding of the workings of the universe, I choose to identify that as the creator. I don't believe that the creator, God, Allah, whatever you want to say, is an old man with a white beard and robes and this. I don't believe that. I don't believe that's what God looks like. I don't believe that is befitting of God to even say this. So I believe that. And how further how I reinforce that belief is because, like I said before, like the infinite loop theory, like, okay, if you say, all right, well, there was a creator or there was something before the Big Bang. Well, what created that? Okay, what created that? What created that? To break that infinite loop, which is to me a logical problem, you have to at some point get to a point where you say, okay, well, something always existed. And that would be the creator, you know, that something always existed beyond our concept of time and space. Everything that we know begins and ends. We see that in our life, you know, everyone that we know is gonna die. We were all born. Our pets die. Our animals are, you know, other animals die. We see plants die. Everything dies. Planets die, suns die, stars die. You know, we have galaxies that we say they're being born, you know, and they're dying. You know, they die into a sun, into a black hole, whatever you want to say. This concept of beginning and ending is all that we know. So it is difficult to comprehend the thought of something having no beginning and having no end, because we don't have any way to relate to that. It's beyond our comprehension, you know. We can't relate to that in any way. So even if you really want to think about it and you really want to get down in it, not kind of like a cloud, I was up way up in the sky, but if you really want to get down in it, you know, even in heaven, all religions that believe in an afterlife in this concept, have the concept of it's eternal, right? So even that is difficult for us to imagine that we're not going to end, we're not going to die again. Where it's where that's it, you know, we just live forever. That to me, anyway, is something that is, I don't want to say difficult to imagine or digest, but it is something that makes us reflect and think about it. Like time, you know, there is no more time, you know, there is no more death. You're just existing. So it's really, really something to think about and ponder when we get into this realm of theology. What happens when we die? If there is an afterlife, is there an afterlife? And we've seen death so much. We see death all the time, and it's mind-boggling. I started this podcast, even though there's only a couple episodes. If you listen to the first one that was back from last October, I did that rebounding off a death of someone that I knew, and that person was a priest, right? And we had some disagreements about it, obviously religious issues, and this guy, he ended up not talking to me, not responding to anything. I don't know why. I had tried multiple times to be in contact with him and kind of rectify any issues that he might have that I had. We got in it, I'm not gonna lie. But you know, these things, as you get older, you know, I don't want to say change your opinions. You might change your opinions, but at least you tend to become softened because you become wiser, older. You're seeing life, you're seeing death. So, this person died, and recently, an annual camping event that we've known each other for happened, and they had like a memorial there. So, we have this, we're surrounded by life and death. We see death happening all the time. And I don't know if it's as we get older, we see it more. But perhaps it's that we're more aware of it. We're more aware of our mortality, and things happened in our lives and in other lives that cause us to reflect, because we're getting to a point where it's like, all right, well, I've lived X amount of years. Average statistics say that I'm only going to live up to average whatever the age is now. I can be healthy, I can do whatever to try to keep that going. But the reality is, this is the average lifespan of a male or a female living in this time period based on these conditions. That's what we're planning for. That's what we expect. But the reality is, you can die anytime. We can die at any time. I can, in my profession, right? My profession, outside of what I choose to present my life to be, what actually makes me money has an increased possibility that something might happen to me, right? Just because I'm in contact with mass amounts of public all the time. I'm driving hours. I can't even clock the amount of hours that I'm driving. It's at least 40 hours, like physically 40 hours a week that I drive just on my job, not mentioning commute, and then what I drive outside of work. But I'm at least physically driving 40 hours a week, right? So imagine being on the road that much. I see crazy stuff all the time. Distracted driving all the time. Texting and driving, cell phones when you're driving. If it was up to me, that would just be, there would be like jammers or something in cars that would prevent this from happening. It would just like lock out your car, your phone, or it would maybe a better idea would be when you get in your vehicle, your phone syncs to via Bluetooth to your vehicle, so if everything is hands-free. I'm sure that's how technology is moving, because if you have a new vehicle, that's how it is. You have that option anyway, so when you get in the car, you can sync your phone right up to your car. But that should be more of an implemented thing that automatically happens, just because there's so much distracted driving. And you see it with kids, and especially young drivers or whatever, because this is their life. Their life is like connected online. I had just spoke to my neighbor, who happens to be running for the county sheriff this year, and he's relatively young in the field of being in the police. But he brought this up in our area, the concept of cyber crime, cyber terrorism, and he brought out examples of cases that had just been going on right here, when and we live outside Minneapolis, of things that were going on, like sex trafficking, drugs, all done via dark web, cryptocurrency. This is stuff that's going on, texting, so this is the world that we're living in, and so when you have these youth who are raised in this world where that's all they know, then obviously when you get behind a wheel or whatever, you're on your phone. I remember, and probably whoever's listening to this is probably in my same general age category. We remember before the internet. We remember before mobile phones were in everyone's pocket. Obviously, they had them for a while, but it was, not till like the mid to late 90s where they started to trickle down to a price point that we all started getting them. So we remember life before this, and I wonder what's going to happen when all of us who remember this aren't around anymore. Eventually that'll be the case. That'll be the case that when there'll be people who don't remember, a time before this technology happened like this. To me, it's interesting. It's interesting thoughts. But in any case, that was kind of like a nice little tangent there. Try to pull back onto some sort of points and topic. Alhamdulillah, all praise to the creator. We are in the first 10 days of Dhul Hijjah, which is the time in Islam that you make a pilgrimage to Mecca. Our biggest celebration, Eid al-Adha, is about to happen on Tuesday or Wednesday, depending. In Saudi Arabia, it's on Tuesday because they saw the moon a day before we did. But if you're basing your time on what we physically saw the moon here in North America, then we saw it a day later, so we're a day behind on the calendar, but everyone is celebrating it on Tuesday. So what is this day? What is this? Why do Muslims make pyramid? Why are pyramids? Why do Muslims make a pilgrimage over there? Why does this occur? So in Islam, I'm bringing this up because I had noticed when I did the interview for the other for Darkness Radio that a lot of people are still ignorant to Islam, and it's understandable given our current climate and stuff like that, and everyone got their own life, and in general, if you're born and raised in your religion, and here in North America, a generalized thing would be that you're Christian. So the concept of your religion is Christian based. So you might not ever have the desire to research Islam or any other religion unless you are directly exposed to it via your friend. Maybe you made a friend who is not the same religion as you. Or you had something happen like everyone in my age demographic will remember 9/11, which brought Muslims into the forefront to be the world's bad guy. It used to be communists, but now it's Muslims. Unless you want to believe media or whatever. You might not ever research this. So, what Muslims believe happened on this day, the 10th, where it's celebrated as the 10th, is that this is the day that Abraham was going to sacrifice his son. And God intervened and gave him a lamb. And so it is called the Festival of the Sacrifice. And on this day, Muslims sacrifice a goat or sheep, or some throw in money and do a cow, more, some even do a camel. So you're technically sacrificing for the sake of God and then, giving the food out to your family or your village or your tribe or whatever. This is the. What's going on there? So this is what happens on this day, leading up to there. Like I said, is the pilgrimage, which you'll see people go to Mecca. So why do they go to Mecca? It's simply because Muslims believe that the Kaaba, which is the black cubical building in the center of the city of Mecca, was built by Abraham and his son. And this is the spot that Abraham took Hajar and Ishmael to this spot, and he left them there. His Hajar was panicking. Gabriel appeared, and the spring gave him the spring, which is called the Well of Zamzam, and they established this city there. Later, Abraham came back and built the Kaaba, which was the first building dedicated to worship of the one God. So, in a nutshell, that's what happens, or that's the reasoning for this pilgrimage. And throughout time since then, people have made pilgrimage to Mecca, which became a trading city and led into all this. We are in this time. Muslims believe that the first 10 days, which we're in now, are the best 10 days of the entire year. So it's a special time for us, even though the media or most people know Ramadan as being the holy time of year for Muslims. Really, the best 10 days of the year are these 10 days. So that's what's going on now. We're in the eighth day as of today. So Hajj is going on. If you've ever seen pictures of it, you know what it's like. If you've ever been there, you know what it's like. Typically, you go perform Hajj or Umrah, which is if you go on pilgrimage outside of this time period of the year, it's called Umrah, which is lesser pilgrimage. You'll understand the emotional joys and feelings you have when you're there. I mean, it's definitely something. It's something spectacular because Muslims face toward Mecca when they pray. So if you're praying five times a day facing this direction, when you actually go to this place and see what you're praying toward, it's really indescribable. And what's interesting, at least from my perspective, is that everyone prays toward the Kaaba. So the people that are right there, the first people make a circle around it, and then a second circle, then a third circle. So you're forming like ranks or rows around this building. And, in theory, that spreads across the whole planet. Something more interesting, I'll just mention this quick, it's that the timing of prayer. Muslims pray five times a day, or they're supposed to anyway. A lot of them don't, but you're supposed to pray five times a day. And the times are set. So two of the time periods of the day are at sunset and dawn, right? So if you're thinking about this, there's that group of people that are praying at that point in time. But this is rotating across the whole planet. So 24 hours a day, there are people worshiping God on the planet. There's a row, a band, of people doing this. In every country, everywhere, there's Muslims. So it's interesting when you think that there's people always continually worshiping the Creator as we believe it. And this is, I'm sure, the same in other religions. I believe in Judaism they also have similar prayer times. in Christianity, that might not be the case because mass, you know, and unless you go to like weekday mass and stuff like this, it might not be, but most certainly, I'm sure there's priests and stuff praying all the time. So it's interesting. It's interesting. And on that same topic, the belief in a creator or something is being established throughout human history. Even if you aren't a monotheist, humans have always believed in something. It's rooted in our subconscious. You know, like people pray to rocks, their totems, trees, the stars, whatever. You know, throughout history, there has always been religion. So, in my mind, the concept of there being no creator, which would be no religion, is a foreign idea to the human mindset. And that is, that's kind of though what is being pushed today, you know, to let go of this, the shackles of religion, you know, let go of this and be free. But at the same time, we have in other aspects of society that want to kind of revert back to some sort of tribalistic ways of things, and skew multiculturalism and this type of stuff. So it's really a mess, the state of everything right now. I'm just gonna leave it there. We've been going for almost 45 minutes, and I just wanted to chime in, just right off the. This was completely like free form. I didn't really make any notes or anything. I just didn't want to go long without having an episode pop up if you're subscribed to it. So hopefully, in the next couple days, I'll go back and break down some topics based on the supernatural aspects and things that came out from that interview. I'm really a fan of this. I listen to stories. I like ghost stories. If you're knew me and you were part of my crew from when we were back in the 90s, we did all those ghost hunts and everything together. We have some crazy, crazy experiences. Those were such a blast. So that kind of stayed with me my whole life. And I've always been a fan of this. So I'd like to touch on that type of stuff more. And just general topics. I kind of touched on mental health here, and I'd like to delve into that a little bit more. The religion stuff, I'm into religion, but I everything kind of is related into religion, but I do like to talk about things that aren't really so religious based, and get perspectives from other experiences and this and that. So hopefully we'll look out for that in the near future. And if you are celebrating Eid Mubarak to you. If you're not, have a great day anyway. It's me, Issa Martel. I'm out of here. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you.